My name is Ann, and I'm a compulsive overeater and a blamer. My God has a great sense of humor because I had planned to get here 10 minutes so I could read the format and have plenty of time to park. And, you know, I came in late, so I apologize for that. I am severely directionally challenged when it comes to reading directions. So anyway, it's really good to be here. It's good to be alive. And for me to say that is a miracle because from where I come from, I would wake up in the morning and the first thing my head would tell me was, you're a piece of shit and you should just die. I have been in OA for 22 years. This is one of the things I absolutely hate doing is getting up and telling you about myself because I think there's a saying that it's overeaters treat loneliness with isolation. And that's what I do because before I came to OA, what I do is close the blinds, turn on the TV, and start ordering to-go food. And I would actually call cabs to get the food because I was in such fear to go out and get it at times. So I definitely belong here. I love this program. I'm also in two other programs. I am in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll be sober 25 years in November, 24 years now. And I'm also in Al-Anon because I have also the disease of let me fix you because I don't want to fix myself. I don't know how long I talk, I guess. Okie dokie. Is there a clock somewhere? Okay, right there. Good, 20 minutes. Okay. So where did I come from? What it was like was, like I said, I would wake up and the first thing in the morning my head would start talking to me and say that you might as well just stay in bed because that bruise on the end of your toe is actually a tumor and it's going to travel up to your brain and you're going to die anyway. It would also tell me that if I had a job, which I'm a very functioning alcoholic and compulsive overeating, it would also tell me that you're going to get fired today from your job. You're going to go to work because they really don't like you, and you're not doing a good enough job anyway, so you might as well just stay home. I've always woken up with that feeling of not enough. And if you're anything like me, I can never get enough ice cream, enough, booze, enough drugs, enough sex, whatever it is. I just always had this big empty hole inside of me that I had to fill with something other than what I really needed, which was spirituality and God. And when I went into AA first, and that's just part of my story. I had reached a point where I was highly suicidal. I was so full of self-hatred that I was starting to lose that functionality that I had always had. So I called up one of my best friends, and I said, I got to do something. I can't go on like this anymore. And we both decided to go to AA, and that's kind of when my process started. And then what happened when I joined AA, I gave up the booze and everything and the drugs, and the feelings really started to come up. Feelings that I don't think I had experienced since the time I popped out, and I didn't know what to do with them. I was just freaked out and so full of fear. I'm bulimic, as I said, and I used to not say I'm a compulsive overeater because, bulimia is all about the self-image and the way you look, and I was really ashamed to say I was a compulsive overeater. But if you think about it, how do I become a bulimic? I stuff my food down my face until, I explode. And, today I can say that, I am a proud member of compulsive overeaters. We all may have different body sizes, but we all have the same head. And that head tells me, I've got to fill up that big hole inside me. So, got sober, and started to experience some spirituality and started to, you know, discover a little bit of peace. But again, the food. I was going to the store, you know, 15 times a day. I was binging and purging, and I couldn't stop. So my sponsor at the time says, you know, maybe you should try OA. And I went to the West Hollywood Drug and Alcohol Center when it was upstairs, and I went to my first bulimics meeting, and I really, really related. I don't remember much about the meeting, but I remember the woman got up and she shared, and she said, I'm so full of self-hatred, I can't stand myself anymore. And that I related to. So I began my, you know, road to Overeaters Anonymous, and I've had long-term abstinence. I think at the most I had 11 years, and what happened for me was I thought I was cured and started to move away from the program, and at 4 years of sobriety, I'm also what they call clinically depressed. And I had to go outside and pursue a psychiatrist and ended up taking antidepressants, which I'm grateful for because at that point I was able to maintain some abstinence. And I know I'm jumping all over the place here, so I apologize. So what happened is I got the 11 years, got comfortable with myself, and then decided that I was cured. And then I was out, in and out for about maybe 5 to 6 years. Currently, I'm maintaining a 5 to 15 pound, I mean, my weight kind of has gone like this my whole life, and now I maintain between like a 1 to 5 pound weight loss. So my highest weight was 135. And then my lowest weight was 86 pounds. So I've gone from, you know, back and forth. And my abstinence today is no binging or purging, which is a huge thing for me because, I mean, I really couldn't get through a day without binging and purging. And so 3 meals a day. I do have snacks in between. I'm hypoglycemic as well. You know, I've gone on the no sugar and sugar diet currently right now. It's no sugar, thank God. But for me, my bottom line abstinence is no binging and no purging. That's because I also suffer from perfectionism. I'm sure none of you can relate to that. that I have to do, you know, everything perfectly. Otherwise, it's not good enough. And I've also have experience with the program of HOW. Some people call it Nazi OA, but to me, I'm very grateful for HOW because it taught me how to eat. You know, it taught me that it's okay to have 3 meals a day, and I weighed and measured my food for many, many years, you know, it taught me how to eat, because I don't know about you, but I didn't come with an instruction manual on how to live life until I got to the 12 steps of the program. And let's see. So currently I have, I just celebrated 9 years of abstinence on June 16th. Thank you. That scares me a little bit because, again, I get long-term abstinence and then I start to feel comfortable. Let me tell you how I, start off my days so that, you know, the tumor on the end of my toe doesn't tell me that I'm going to, you know, die of a brain hemorrhage or something. This is my little Bible, and my AA sponsor taught me that to get every morning, get on my knees and say my first 3 steps. So that's how I begin my day. I say the first 3 steps, and I also say the St. Francis Prayer, which is my favorite of all time. So I'm an animal lover, so I related a lot to St. Francis. And then I have to do, or not have to do, I choose to do a couple pages of daily affirmations because, again, you know, the tumor on the end of my toe always tell me that I'm not good enough, I'm a piece of shit, you know, you have no reason to be here. And then I do an angel meditation. Today I choose to believe in angels. I choose to have a positive view of the world, which is a miracle because of where I come from. I say the acceptance prayer, page 449, and then I do some more affirmations. And this is an everyday thing. I don't know if you've seen that, the commercial, the V8 commercial where the guy doesn't have his V8 and he walks out the door and he's like sideways. The days that I do go out the door and I don't do this, that's how I feel. But the miracle is now that I know I can still get down on my knees, I can still just have that comfort with God to get back into that center of things. You know, and my journey in OA is, I know now I'm never going to be cured, and I don't want to be because I live for this program, for my 12-step programs. When I came to AA, I was a bartender and a drug dealer, and I dealt quite a lot of drugs in West Hollywood. And if you would have told me, 25 years ago that I would go back to school and get my degree, I would be teaching 6-year-olds. I would set goals and actually accomplish them. I would go on these adventures that are unbelievable, and I would walk through so many fears that I've had. I would have told you were nuts. And I can say with glee that I have done all those things. I've gone skydiving. I went back to school. I've got my degree. I've been teaching now, and I'm in my 11th year. Is it the perfect job? No. But what I get to do is, like this summer, I thought I was going to quit teaching because I was so fed up because these kids were just not doing what I want them to do, and they're just, blah, 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 the negative thinking. And I had the whole summer to evaluate, okay, maybe I'm going to go train animals, and work in the movie industry again. And what happened was we got a puppy, and I learned that I do not have the patience I thought that I had to train animals, And I got to, self-reflect after doing lots of writing and stuff, saying, teaching is a great job, and I still have so much work to do for the kids and for myself, because every day I get to go there, there's always that one little kid, the one little Stanley or Jose or Maxine that has something to teach me. And, it's always, always, always comes right back to me that it's something that I'm doing. It's not about the outside stuff. It's who I am and as a person. And I think my time is almost up. I try to remember to write things down, and I love listening to other people. That's how I have been blessed, is by listening to the issues that my fellow OAs have, because when I hear that you've been through something that I think I absolutely cannot go through, and I hear that you've, made it through, it has just helped me so much. So here's some great quotes I've heard in the meetings. God, please come between me and the food so the food doesn't come between you and me. Meetings help us feel better, but the steps help us get better. Was that my time? Oh, okay. Somebody's cell phone? Okay. This is one of my favorites. Tears are like rain. They loosen our soil so we can grow in different directions. We cannot climb a rope that is attached to our own belt. And my all-time favorite, the highest form of wisdom is kindness. God, just let me be myself because I know everybody else is taken. And then what we think about and what we think about is what we bring about. The last one, today my program and my life reflect progress, not perfectionism. I see myself and my body as a work in progress. And today is as good as it's going to get, and I am so blessed to be here to be a part of this program. And thank you for letting me be a servant.
If you can remember when you broke your abdomen or had a binge, how did you go about forgiving yourself?
Excellent question. How did I forgive myself once I went out and binge and forgive myself so that I can move forward? I think the number one number one thing I did was started praying a lot. And I made sure that I called a lot of people. I went to a lot of meetings. And you know what? It started by just saying it. You know what? And I try to talk to myself as if I were a kid, a six-year-old, you know. It's okay, Anne. You know, everybody makes mistakes. It's not the end of the world. And the thing is, you know, we can all, you know, step off at any time, But we can also step right back on. So, I mean, self-forgiveness has been a really real struggle for me. And I feel you. It's hard. But I also know that we can get to the other side if, you know, we hold out our hands and start, you know, using the steps of the program and the people here. So thank you. Yes, hi.
Hi. Thank you for your share. Could you share with us your journey in finding your higher power and how that's looked over the 20-odd years that you've been in?
Okay. Great question. How has my journey? How has my journey with my higher power been? It's definitely it's very flexible. I think through my whole life I was always on a spiritual journey. I was, you know, I tried Judaism, I tried Mormonism, I tried Buddhism. I mean, I did all the isms because I was always in search of that peace. And I think for me, you know. I think it started for me, you know, reading page 86 of the big book on awakening. You know, let us think about the 24 hours ahead before we begin. We ask God to direct our thinking. And I just started with that. And I've, you know, gone to many other, you know, Marian, I shouldn't say anything, but outside programs. Because, you know, who am I to judge anybody else's program? So I try to open myself up to, you know, other possibilities. But I would say the core of my program has been out of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. The OA 12 and 12 is a fantastic journey if you haven't taken that. And I think I've used pretty much all of the literature, the workbook. I currently am working with a sponsor. We do the steps every year. We keep going over it. And, you know, like I just try to go out there and experience, you know, different things. I think yoga has brought me a lot of peace as far as, you know, my inner core. And I think my other higher power, being a bulimic, is exercise and being out in nature. So that is all part of my, you know, spiritual journey. When I am having a very difficult time, the best thing I can do is to go sit on the beach and just listen to the waves. So I hope that answers your question. Hi.
Hi, thanks. Not sure if this happens, but when you're working with kids, what happens with you if you see a kid who's on his or her way to becoming a healthy kid?
Oh. That's where my Al-Anon program comes in. Yeah, I mean, I know that I am powerless over other people. You know, I have my mother, whom I love dearly, but she suffers from mental illness and several diseases, and nothing can push me over the edge than trying to control her. And, you know, I have learned that that's God's business. You know, Jose or Maxine or whatever, if they're going down that road, there's nothing I can do but be an example. You know, I can show them that I feel better when I eat healthy. I feel better when I exercise. But other than that, you know, it's none of my business. So. Hi.
Hi. Forgive me if you mentioned it, but did you hit a bottom? And if so, what was that like before you actually walked into the, you know,
yeah,
like 12-step bottom?
Well, I guess part of my bottom was I couldn't go to restaurants unless they had a private bathroom so that I could throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my bottom was locking myself in my room and putting photographer's tape over the windows because I didn't want to see the sunlight. Part of my bottom was writing bad checks, eating out of the garbage, having to put things in the garbage disposal, and grind it up so that I know I couldn't go back and get it. Lying, cheating, all those things that, you know, get us to that place where we don't want to be. But I think that the main thing was I didn't want to be on this earth anymore. And I actually had a plan to go out and buy a gun. A friend of mine committed suicide, and thank goodness Not that she did that, but thank goodness that I went through that experience, because I know the pain that she caused, you know, other people and myself. So I guess suicide. You know, I wanted to leave the earth. Yes.
After working such a rigorous POW program, how did you transition to eating three moderate meals and snacks without that fear of, oh my God, it's more baking or something? Like, how did you?
I still do that, and thank you for mentioning that. You know, the perfectionism is my number one character defect. It's something that I have to prey on constantly. And again, it's having that self talk, you know, to myself, like, okay, yeah, you had one stick of celery too much. Okay, is that the end of the world? No. Does God still love you? Yes. Can you still love yourself? Yeah, I think I can do that. For me, you know, how was an instruction booklet of how to eat. And OA is my hug. You know, OA has become the arms that wrap around me all the time and tell me that no matter what I do, no matter what my food looks like, I'm still a good person. I hope that answers it. Yeah. Hey, hi, how are you?
Could you talk about the scurvy in your recovery?
Thank you for mentioning that. I take phone calls, I return phone calls, I sponsor people. My perfectionism always comes into play, you know, with that, because I want to be the perfect sponsor. But again, my Al-Anon program helps me, because I can't fix anybody unless they want to fix themselves. Currently, I don't have a commitment through my 25 years in the programs. I've always had a commitment. Right now, I'm taking a break, and I'm sure that's going to change. But one of the best things I can do about myself is to take a commitment so that I can show up for myself and for others. And I think that's what's kept me in these rooms all those years, has been, you know, doing service and being of service. Hi.
What's your concept of a higher power, and how did you come to it?
What's my concept of a higher power and how do I come to it? When I first came to the meetings, Madonna was my higher power. And then it was the good witch of the West or East. Yeah, I always get East and West. The good witch from The Wizard of Oz. That's what I had pictured in my mind. As my spirituality has evolved, I can see a God, but it doesn't have a sex. It's not a man nor a woman. I also use nature as my concept of God. You know, when I look at a rose and that, look at that magnificence, you know, that's somebody created that, and it certainly wasn't me. You know, when I look at the ocean, to me, you know, there's no way I could have created that. So, is that the timer? Darn it. And you know, I think it's still evolving. I don't think I have that. I think when I grew up, because I, you know, I was a Christian for a while, and I always had the Christ on the cross. I can't even have that image anymore. To me, God is so much more than somebody suffering. To me, God is the love that you know, is in these rooms. To me, God is the things that happen after all the disasters, you know, like Hurricane Katrina or you know, the tsunami. It's the people that come after that to do the helping, to do the putting back together. That is my concept of God. In the back, and then you. Hi.
What direction do you give a new sponsee?
I'm sorry?
What direction do you give a new sponsee?
What direction do I give a new sponsee? Again, go to as many meetings as you can. Try and talk. Get into the steps. Start with every day with page 86 on Awakening. And go where the love is, and go where the winners are. And hold on tight, because it can be a bumpy ride. Yes.
Can you please talk specifically about how you use the program to combat your perfectionism?
Okay, how do I use the program to combat my perfectionism? I do, like I said, I do page 86, and I do all this in the morning. In the evening, I also read, I think it's page 87 or 88, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And, you know, sixth graders, I mean, six-year-olds can be very, very draining. And, you know, as well as anybody else, I'm sure. I really have to watch myself because I want to go home and I want all my kids to be able to be at a certain point. And they're just not. So my perfectionism comes into play. So the first thing I do is I forgive myself if I raise my voice for any time of the day. And then the second thing is, you know, I ask God to direct my thinking again. And, you know, I do a daily, I wouldn't say a daily, I would say at least a weekly self-inventory. And I have a format in one of my meditation books where I can just, like, do a spot check inventory, you know. I resent myself because I yelled at Jose. What did it affect? It affects my self-esteem, my personal relations, you know, and I just do the five-column inventory. And the most important column, I think, is the last column, which is the fear inventory. What am I afraid of? You know, and it all comes down to I'm not good enough. I'm not perfect enough, you know, and then forgiving myself for not being perfect. And I still work on that. I have no answers. Mm-hmm. You know, I just have... you know, my experience of using the 12 steps and doing what you people in this room have told me to do. So, I hope that answered the question. Yes, hi.
Hi, good to see you.
Good to see you.
I'm also in more than one program, happy to speak or three. Somebody asked me to be there a few weeks ago, but you may have a different answer. How do you balance your program?
You know, like this. You know, it goes up and down. I find, you know, if I see my mother more, I'm going to more Al-Anon meetings. If I'm having difficult with food, then I'm going to more OA meetings. You know, I have no fear of drinking anymore, but I hear different things in different meetings. And I think God puts me in the meetings that I'm supposed to be. But I still struggle on a daily basis with balance, especially, you know, when I'm teaching, because, like I said, it's exhausting. And the last thing I want to do when I go home is, you know, especially after a meal, is to get in my car and go to another meeting. And I find the more resistant I am to it, then the more I'm going to go. And I go to usually one Al-Anon meeting a week. I go to one AA meeting a week, and I go to two OA meetings. That's in an ideal week. So do I do that all the time? Absolutely not. But I try. That's my goal. Yes, and then you.
Just to piggyback on the previous question, having balanced sponsors.
How do I balance sponsors?
Well, no.
Yeah. I have a different sponsor for my OA program. I have a long-term sponsor for my AA program, and currently I do not have an Al-Anon sponsor, so I'm still trying to balance that. I've really had a difficult time in Al-Anon trying to find a sponsor, which kind of pisses me off, which I've had to do an inventory on, because it's just, you know, these people are here because they want to take care of other people. Why don't they want to take care of me? You know? So it's a process, you know. It's just another process. So I'm constantly looking for. I'm on the tightrope. So. Yes.
Thank you. You said just something briefly before that you're not afraid of drinking, and I know that in the program there's a lot of talk about OA being like AA in terms of dealing with our food or our, you know, how do you compare your struggling with the food or the as opposed to not being
drinking? I think not drinking was a breeze compared to compulsive overeating. To me, this is my number one disease. You know, if I look at my pictures when I was a kid, I always had something shoved in my face, and it was food, you know, from the time I was two on. And I think that, you know, before I even started drinking or doing drugs, you know, I was at the Winchell's donut truck. I was stealing money out of my stepfather's drawer so that I could go to the Helms bakery truck. Wow, I just dated myself. So, you know, this to me is the hardest disease because, you know, with alcohol they say you can put the plug in the jug. You know, I can put that in the cupboard and not open the cupboard or, you know, stay away from bars. But in, you know, compulsive overeating, man, we got to eat three times a day. You know, we drive down the street and we can see any number of our binge buddies as we're, you know, going down any street. And, you know, that food still gives me comfort. I don't get it. Well, yeah, I guess I do get hangovers from food, absolutely. This to me is my primary, and there is the difference. I don't know. The difference to me is that the eating is a lot harder than the drinking was. Yes.
Hi. I'm just exhausted hearing how much you do.
Not every day, not
yet. And I'm wondering, is there a respite for you, or what does that look like, where you just completely check out of everything, or is that not?
Absolutely. How do I not check out? I still can check out, to be quite honest. Some days, my asthma is not no sugar, but, sometimes I'll go get a frozen yogurt. That's how I'll check out. The difference is I don't go back for a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth, and I don't like the way it makes me feel afterwards. Because then my perfectionism comes in and then I've got to do more step work. Why did I have that yogurt? Well, because I was feeling like I wasn't a good daughter. How that made me feel. What's my defect? And it's more work, but I still, it's a lot more work. I know I can't do what I used to do anymore. Do I sometimes still do it? Absolutely. I am not perfect. And sometimes I backslide. But the difference is is that my time?
Yeah.
Come on, man. You keep teasing me. That's okay. I still backslide. And how do I get back? It's, going back to the basics.
Keeping it simple.
And, sometimes the way I can check out is spiritually. I can go to the beach and just sit there and listen to the waves, or sit on my bed with my dog and shut the door and play with, the puppy. So, yeah. Hi.
Thank you,
Susan. My pleasure.
How do you know for yourself what is your will and your higher power's will? And when you sit there and you're faced with the two,
yeah, that's a great analogy right there. Yeah, that's what I do. My will versus my higher power's will. Usually, if it's my will, it's a struggle. It's a big struggle. With my higher power's will, it's like the waves just kind of come in and they flow and they go back out. With my will, it's like I am going into the wave and I try to surf. It's like I'm fighting to get through the set before it's over. So I'm struggling. I'm paddling. And when I finally get over that hump and I'm out there where the waves have calmed down, that's my higher power's will. That's when I can go, oh, okay. And usually, I think most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, there's a little voice in here that's saying, it's probably not the path you want to go down. You might want to think about, oh, we can have to do another inventory. You really want to do that? Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Thank you. After doing this stuff so many times, how do you keep it fresh? Do you get a new sponsor? Do you do them differently every time?
How do I keep my program fresh? I think every time, and I don't know about you. I'm aging. I'm, in my late 50s now, and I'm forgetting everything. Okay, so I actually went back and read some of my first journals, and I'm like, oh my God, I've gotten so much better. and I look back at my step work because I keep all this stuff. And that my first sponsor told me, keep all that stuff. But I'm like, no, I want to throw it away. I was so sick. But now I can look back and go, dang, man, I used to be one sick puppy. But I'm getting better with each time. And each time I've written on the steps, it's been a different issue. One time it was I'm powerless over, In-N-Out. Well, now I'm powerless over frozen yogurt. So it just, it depends. So, And then I don't know about you, but every single time I read that big book, or the 12 steps, I see a sentence in there or a word or a whole paragraph that I could swear on my mother's life I've never read. You know, so, yeah, I think God keeps it fresh for me. Yes, hi.
Hey, sorry, just some questions.
No problem. More is better.
What's been your experience with looking forward to eating and enjoying, like, a meal as you've gone through the program?
How do I look? That's a great question. How do I look? Let me see if I can repeat it. Look forward to the meal, and I forgot the rest. look forward to the meal. Look forward to the
looking forward to the meal and enjoying the eating. Whereas, you know, before, I imagine you were just disappearing into the food. And it was awesome, and all it was for the moment.
How do you
allow yourself to look forward to a meal? Do you allow yourself to really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called hunger. Sometimes I have to put my fork down and take a breath because I will be, you know, my wife, we married in our, we're in our 21st year, been married legally for 5 years.
Yay!
Thank you. And she's a compulsive overeater and diabetic. And her family eats like they're at a trough because she has four older brothers. So they're used to shoveling it down and then teaching. I have to shovel it down because I only have a limited amount of time. So I still struggle with that. And I will probably continue to struggle with that because of time, because of, you know, the way our lives are now. Everything's multitasked. You know, you got to eat, you got to drink, you got to run, blah, blah, blah. So I don't have an answer to that. But I know that if I pause first before I start to eat, and I try to talk to God, and if I find myself at the pig trough, you know, mowing it down, I know that I can always pause, take a breath, and remember, you know, so, yeah. And remember that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to every single meal. Hey. Thank you so much, everybody.